When you launch a book, your biggest fan pays the same price as the person who's not sure who you are, but your cover looks kind of interesting. And this is taking away from your staunchest supporters the ability to support your book more. Brandon Sanderson went to his publisher a few years ago and he said, I want to make a $200 version of my book for my biggest fans. And they laughed him out of the room and gave him the rights back so that he could do it himself. So he put a collector's edition of his book on Kickstarter and raised $6 million. At the time, I think the most successful publishing Kickstarter campaign ever, definitely one of the most successful campaigns ever. And he was able to demonstrate to the whole world that putting a book on Kickstarter and selling it at multiple price points can be very effective. Of course, he then proved it without a doubt when a couple of years later, he raised $40 million on Kickstarter, selling high quality versions of his book, but also selling ebooks and audiobooks. And yet, even to this day, some people don't know what Kickstarter is or what a useful tool it can be for helping to launch a book and helping solve indie authors' biggest challenge, which is not having the money now that they need to launch their book. Yes, you'll make money when you sell your book, but future money is not the same as present money. And Kickstarter solves that problem. So what is Kickstarter and how can you use it to help launch your book? We'll find out in this episode of Novel Marketing, the longest running book marketing podcast in the world. I'm Thomas Umstead Jr., CEO of Author Media, and this is the show for writers who want to build their platform, sell more books, and make a living writing books worth talking about. And we have a very special guest who's smack dab in the middle of her Kickstarter for her book. It's the epic fantasy novel Blood of the Stars, and it's doing really well. Corinne Norton, welcome to the Novel Marketing Podcast.
Thanks so much for having me, Thomas.
So tell me the story of you putting your book on Kickstarter. What made you want to do a Kickstarter campaign rather than going straight to Amazon?
To be honest, it was because of you. I hadn't even heard of using Kickstarter until I took Book Launch Blueprint, where you had the crowdfunding course on there. And so that was the first time I heard about using it, and I started considering it. And that's where I met CJ Malacy, and she and I started researching it together. And so we found two books that were written on the topic and went through those together and kind of made a plan. And then I let her be the guinea pig and do it first. And then ever since then, we've just been kind of working back and forth together.
So this is a really powerful principle of being a successful author, and that is to have author friends before you become a best-selling author. Because you and CJ were both unpublished authors together. And now you're both successful Kickstarters, right? Your campaign's not over, but it's already way funded and she's way funded hers. And now you've got this relationship that started when y'all were not known and now you are, and that relationship's only growing. And so I really encourage you, if you don't yet have those author friends, now's the time to make them. It's not going to get easier. Getting famous isn't going to make it easier. It's going to make it harder and more complicated to make author friends.
Yeah, I've really enjoyed working with CJ, and we write very different genres, have very different target audiences, but we're still able to help each other in that. And I think initially I was always wanting another person who wrote like me, and you don't need that. It just needs to be someone who's strong where you're weak and someone who will push you to be a little bit more than what you might push yourself to be.
That's right, because if they're too similar, it's really easy to get envious. And if you're fighting for the exact same reader, it's also possible to get jealous, which is different from envy, I have learned. But both are toxic for authors. And so similar but not exact is easier. You can still be friends with someone who writes for your exact same audience, but it is psychologically and morally more complicated. You need to have a more generous spirit. And it's really easy for envy to creep in for all of us. So you're working with CJ and you're watching her do her Kickstarter campaign. What were some things that you noticed watching her campaign that you wanted to either emulate or do differently?
So emulating, I pretty much wanted to do a lot of the same things as her because we'd researched it and planned it together. But as far as different things, I wanted to plan mine out further in advance because one of the things that you can do is set up a pre-launch page where people can then follow your campaign. And so I set that up way back in March of this year. And so for the last 6 months, I've been encouraging people to go follow the campaign. And there was nothing there except for a picture and a little one sentence summary, and then people could click on follow. And that way, when the campaign launched, they would get an email telling them it launched to remind them to go look at it. And so I had almost 200 followers by the time my campaign launched, which is pretty unusual for a debut author. The authors who have already published get high numbers like that, but that was significant for me to have a good launch right out of the gates.
And the other thing is that in order for somebody to follow your campaign, they have to create a Kickstarter account, which gets the biggest point of friction out of the way, right? Because a lot of people, they like the fact that they already have an account on Amazon. They don't use a password manager. And so setting up another account is this burden. And it takes some time to convince someone to get a Kickstarter account. Now, for you listening, I think you need to get a Kickstarter account and start backing some books, even if it's only for $1. Just to learn how it's done, even if you don't go on to do a Kickstarter yourself, it's important to become fluent in Kickstarting and how this process works and know your way around a Kickstarter campaign. And I will say, Corinne's campaign for Blood of the Stars is one of the best executed campaigns I've seen. Like the details, she really paid attention to the details and did this well. And this pre-launch strategy, I think, is actually a better strategy for most authors than what I did for the Kickstarter for the Novel Marketing Conference. Now, there's a limited number of seats at the Novel Marketing Conference. And so I wanted to give patrons and people who are part of the courses early access to the Kickstarter, which meant I couldn't do a big pre-launch campaign because anybody on Kickstarter could have backed it right away. And so I did the opposite of your approach, which is called the soft launch approach, which is where you don't tell a lot of people right away and then you do a bigger launch later on down the road. The advantage of the soft launch approach is that when you do announce it, you're not sending anybody to a page that's got zero backers, right? Because you already told your kind of core folks about it. But the downside, though, is that you don't get that surge of attention. Like for your campaign, because you had 200 people who are following it, when you clicked launch, how long did it take for you to hit 100% funded?
It took me just under an hour.
That's great. So yeah. You knew you had a successful campaign within an hour. It probably took some of the pressure off.
Yes.
Which, again, is another difference. So Novel Marketing Conference is different in that there's lots of real expenses. And I had to set the goal much higher. So as I'm recording this, the campaign's not funded yet. The conference may or may not even happen. I have a strange piece about it, because if it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen. The main thing I want to avoid is losing a ton of money on the conference. But for something like a book where you know you're going to launch the book regardless, it makes sense to have a lower goal and to try to fund it really quickly.
Yes, I see two main strategies. And one is to set the goal around 500, which is what I did, so that you can fund quickly and people know they're going to get the book when they order it. And then other people, if they're doing like a deluxe special edition where they're going to be doing a print run of like 500 books, and so they have to sell at least 300 books. They set their amount much higher, around 10,000 or something. But that's typically people who are coming in with an audience of super fans who want that fancy edition. And so I knew that wasn't going to be a strategy I used as a debut author.
That's right, because you had no books published. People are pledging for a book they have not read from an author they have never heard of. Or they may have seen you through your marketing, or they may have read one of your reader magnets. But this is your first book to sell. So walk us through how you built that audience of 200 people ahead of time. How did you get 200 people to want to pay for your book before they had a chance to read it?
Yeah. So I was really aiming for backer numbers with this Kickstarter instead of dollar amounts. And I think that's unusual even among people selling books on Kickstarter, because as a debut author, I want to be bringing in readership versus money. Eventually, I want the money to come, but right now I want to build fans. And so I set a personal goal of reaching 250 backers in this campaign, and I'm actually almost there. So I did set my pricing a little bit lower, and I'm not offering things like swag or tuckerization, which is where people can pay to name a character or that sort of thing, because I wanted to make sure that the people who were backing the book were people who wanted to read the book. So that was one of my strategies. Initially, the reason I went with Kickstarter and really drew out this campaign over a long time was because I knew that I wanted to start publishing when my youngest started kindergarten. And so I'm a planner, and I started looking at, okay, if I'm going to publish a book in the fall of 2023, how do I need to get there over the next year? And so I started setting up different smaller goals to get there. And so one was to start my newsletter list about a year earlier. And about 6 months earlier, I had my reader magnet go out. And about 3 months earlier, I started my podcast. And so all of these things were there to build that readership way before the Kickstarter started.
Dig your well before you're thirsty. This is what I teach in Obscure No More and in Book Launch Blueprint. A big mistake that a lot of authors make is that they put themselves in a frantic rush. And you did the opposite of that, right? Partly because you wanted to wait for kindergarten to start. So you had this kind of date deep into the future. But by not twiddling your thumbs and making the most of that time, you're able to build up an email list. So when you launched your campaign, how big was your email list?
3,400.
So that's a 5-10% conversion rate. We won't know. All right, your most effective email will be the one with the title "Last Chance" that you'll send out a week from now. But that's a good size email list. It's a very achievable email list for somebody following the novel marketing method. You know, the things that I teach in my courses teach you how to get a list of thousands, especially if you're doing the things that you did, right? You have a reader magnet and you're putting some effort into it. You're not just telling a few friends. I do want to go back to something you said earlier, because you're like, my rewards are less expensive. And that's true, but it's only true for somebody who's not familiar with Kickstarter. So right now, as we record this, you've raised $8,523 off of 224 backers. So I pulled out my calculator, and that comes out to $38 per backer. And so that's less than the typical campaign, which is probably closer to $50 per backer, but it's not much less, and it's still way more than you'd be making per reader if your book was on Amazon. You'd be, typical indie authors are making $3 to $5 per reader, maybe $7 or $8 on the high end. Typical traditionally published authors making like 80 cents per reader, a dollar per reader. And so by doing this on Kickstarter, you're making a lot more per reader. And that's still really good money. So while from a Kickstarter perspective, you're like, oh, these are really cheap rewards, there's some margins there that allow you to make a beautiful hardback. And I think that that's your most popular level is your $40 level, which comes with a beautiful hardback. And it's beautiful. The way you present it on the screen is really pretty. And your graphics make it look like something that's really worth buying. So how did you make such a pretty book on your first time?
Well, I hired a cover designer because there's no way I was going to do that myself. And graphics, I just used Canva, and I would just search for free mockups for books. And it did take a lot of time to find free ones. If I was going to pay, I probably would have used Placeit, because I had another friend who was using that and she got a lot of beautiful images from it. But I just chose to use the free ones.
And these mockups, they take your cover and they place it inside of an iPad, inside of an iPhone with little earbuds coming out, and then wrap it around a hardback where it makes it look really nice. And so it allows somebody to visualize what they're buying, which again, is not something that you can do with the first conference. So one of my challenges with the novel marketing conference is people are like, I want pictures of what it's going to look like. And I'm like, we've never done this before, right? We haven't had a chance to take those pictures. Part of the reason this conference is so cheap this first year is I'm going to have photographers there taking pictures of the small groups, taking pictures of the presentations. We'll be recording B-rolls while the presentations aren't going to be recorded. We'll be shooting video that we can then use in our video to show people what it's going to look like. But that's a real challenge. This isn't going to look exactly like another writer's conference. And it's hard to make writer's conferences look fun. People sitting and listening to a lecture is not a very attractive photo. And even though ours are going to be interactive and more fun, we haven't done it yet, so we don't have those photos. But it's really easy when you're doing a book Kickstarter to just put the book cover and have the one image and nothing more. And that's not what you did. And I encourage you to go and check out this Kickstarter. We'll have a link to it in the show notes. And even for those of you listening in the future, you won't be able to back the campaign, but you'll still be able to look at the pictures. And she does a really good job telling the story visually. So you've got graphics spacing things out. You have a picture of the cover with little lines featuring all of the different tropes. This is really good. And a lot of authors are nervous to do this. They're like, I don't want to tell people about the tropes. People want to know about the tropes. So you have things like frenemies to lovers, reluctant hero, dragons. I saw dragons. I was like, okay, I'm in. Blood magic, brink of war, right? Like people who are looking for books want to get a sense for what's inside of it. But you're like, oh, but some people may see that I have found family and they don't want found family. Like, better now than after they bought the book and left a negative review, right? It's like, if they're not going to like the book, you want to help them know they're not going to like the book.
On my video, I actually use a little bit of a different strategy than other people. I feel like there's two types of videos. One where there's the author talking about the book and telling people about it. And the other where it's more like a book trailer and there's very little FaceTime for the author. And I didn't want the FaceTime, but I also didn't have the skills to make a book trailer. And so I recorded myself as if I was doing a FaceTime video, and then I put graphics over it and walked them through those things. But the things that I hit on were the three reasons not to read my book, and then the three reasons to read my book, because I wanted to turn away the people who wouldn't like the things I had in my book right away, because they're not the people I want backing my Kickstarter.
I thought that was a really clever way of structuring it. I really liked your video, and it's very Broca shocking for somebody who's looked at a lot of Kickstarter videos. This one felt very different, and yet it didn't have fancy production design other than the structure of it. It's all something you can do with iMovie or Windows Movie Maker. What did you use to make the video?
I used iMovie and Canva.
So you made the graphics on Canva and you dropped them on top of an iMovie video. And iMovie, for those of you who don't know, if you have a Mac, you already own iMovie. It comes free with every Mac. So it's nothing fancy, nothing that couldn't be reproduced. And it's just you talking to your camera. Did you memorize the script? Were you using a teleprompter?
So at first I tried memorizing it because I wasn't planning on putting graphics there. But I am an introvert. I get very nervous. It didn't go well. And so then I just read it off the screen, which looked terrible, which is why I put the graphics over my face.
It is difficult to discipline yourself to look into the camera because you want to look at your script or you want to look at your video. So it does take a little bit of practice. But being able to cover your face up with graphics, at least for part of the time, allows you to hide cuts. So if you do multiple takes, you just do this one take and then you put a graphic and then you do the next take. And you can make it look a little more organic. And the more graphics you have for your book, the more graphics you can feature in your video. So let's talk about your rewards. Walk us through the reward levels and what you offer at the different price points.
So for the reward levels, I opted to have a taste tester level that was just $2. And that actually is just my reader magnet, both in ebook and audio format, because for my podcast, we record stories, my brother and I do, and he recorded my story. And so being able to offer both formats made me feel comfortable making it $2. And that's just if people are wanting to see what I'm like without having to commit to a full book. The next level I did was called Early Ebooks for Everyone, and that just adds the ebook to the $2 reader magnet. So that was then $10 to add in that ebook. The next level was paperbacks as promised, so then that adds in the paperback. But really, I'm having every level build off of the level before. It gives perceived value for them to get the ebook as well as the paperback. So then it makes the higher price point compared to Amazon feel like less of a hit because they're getting both the ebook and the paperback. And the ebook, they're going to be getting getting next month, whereas the paperback, they're going to have to wait until it's done with the printer. So this way, they still get it really early in ebook format.
And I love this about Kickstarter, because this bundling doesn't cost you any extra, right? The variable cost is just the paper book. But by including the ebook and the reader magnet and the audio for the reader magnet, you make it feel like a lot more. And by giving people early access, that makes it really special. And it makes that $25 feel cheap. And yet your popular level is your next one. So why are so many people choosing the $40 level over the levels we've already talked about?
So this was a last minute decision that stressed me out quite a bit. But hardcovers really sell a lot more on Kickstarter. Especially there's deluxe editions out there that people, like collectors, get really excited about. And I knew that my hardcover wasn't going to be anything super special. I did have a stretch goal planned to have a really pretty hardcover underneath the dust jacket, but I only wanted to do that if we reached a certain level. And when I started looking at campaigns out there, I decided fairly last minute, I think I need this from the start. I think I need a more expensive option that's more beautiful, that really attracts those people who are interested in the fancy hardcovers. That's why you'll see in the photos, there's the dust jacket, which looks just like the paperback, but then underneath it, there's a separate design that just has more of a fancy feel.
And I know that that's more complicated to get printed, right? Because you're not able to get this fancy hardback through KDP. How are you getting this printed?
Right now, I'm planning to do Ingram Spark.
The $40 level isn't your most expensive level. So walk us briefly through the other more expensive levels that you have above that.
Yes. So I wanted to have a couple higher levels just so that it didn't look like they were all going for the most expensive thing when I directed them to the hardcover. So I do have one level that is give one, get one, and that just has two paperbacks instead of one. And I presented it as an opportunity to give a friend a gift or to donate it to the local library. And I have had a few people go for that. And then the final one is six paperbacks and a bonus Q&A session with me for a book club or to use it as easy gift giving. And no one's gone for that, and I'm not surprised. I'm okay with that. I just wanted to have a higher tier to make the hardcover tier not look so high.
And this is a principle that we teach here on the podcast and the courses called anchoring. So if you want to make a price look like a bargain, you anchor it to a higher price. This is why when you go to your grocery store, on the end of the wine aisle is a $100 bottle of wine. That $100 bottle of wine is not intended to be sold, because people don't go to their grocery store to buy $100 bottles of wine. They go to a wine store if they're going to spend that much money on wine. The purpose of that $100 bottle of wine is to make the $30 bottles of wine look cheaper. Because if the $30 bottle of wine is your most expensive bottle of wine, people will buy a $20 bottle of wine. But when the $100 bottle of wine is an option, suddenly that $30 wine starts to sell. So it's okay to have levels that no one actually backs at, as long as those levels still work for you financially if somebody does back at them. Because occasionally you'll have somebody who really believes in you or really believes in your book or really wants those rewards that's willing to back. So you want to make sure you structure that reward in such a way where it doesn't bankrupt you. But your campaign is perfectly successful despite the fact, and maybe in some ways because of the fact, that you have this high-level reward no one's backing at. But it is drawing more people to those $40 and $50 levels. What have you been doing since the campaign went live to keep people excited?
So one thing I did that I haven't seen other people doing, at least not consistently, is I have been creating stretch goal polls. So if you're not super familiar with Kickstarter, when you set it up, you pick a funding goal. And we talked about how that's usually a low amount, maybe around $500. But you don't want people to see you hit $500 and think, oh, she's funded, we're good, we don't need to help her, we'll wait for it to come out on retailers. You want to encourage people to get to a higher amount, and you kind of pick that number in your head. And then you're creating stretch goals that hit smaller amounts that kind of are a breadcrumb trail from that low funding goal to your ceiling amount that you truly want to reach. And so everyone usually does stretch goals of some sort. But the way I changed it up was I created polls with my stretch goals. And so for each stretch goal, I give them two options and I send them to my website to vote for those two options. And whichever option is in the lead at the time that we hit that stretch goal, that's the one everybody gets.
I love that. I think I'm going to use that if we do stretch goals for the Novel Marketing Conference. I love the idea of voting because it does several things. One, it gets people more engaged. But two, it helps you select stretch goals that are more resonant with your audience because there's the things that you think they care about and there's the things that they actually care about. And there may be quite a mismatch. And it only takes one demotivating stretch goal for people to pull off the gas when it comes to helping you promote your Kickstarter. Because that's the other really cool thing about Kickstarter is that if you have good stretch goals, if you haven't yet hit your funding goal, the people who've backed you are motivated to help spread the word, to help share your campaign with their friends. Be like, hey, you got to check out this book. It's from a debut author. It looks really cool. I read her short story 3 months ago. It was amazing. This book is in that same world with the same characters. I think you should really like it. That's a really easy pitch to make. And now that your backers are also becoming your advocates.
Yeah, and it's had surprisingly good engagement. I've had over 100 votes for each of the last two polls, and people are messaging me when the results come in, either excited about which one won or sometimes to say, hey, can you please put the loser in the next stretch goal? Because I really wanted that. And so they're excited about it. There was one time I had stickers in there for two in a row and no one wanted those. And so I kicked them out. And that was a great way for me to see that they don't want stickers.
And it saved you from the cost of printing those stickers only yep. to then have people not want them, right? Because some readers really like stickers. And the only way to know if your readers want something or not is to ask your readers.
Yeah, the other thing that I've done to keep engagement is that I have personally thanked every single backer. And I know that's considered best practice, but as I'm talking to people, I also know it's not being done. And it really stands out to the backers. And I get a lot of responses from them thanking me or telling me why they backed. I've gotten several who've said, oh, I read your sample chapters and I'm so excited to read the rest of the story. So that's been super encouraging for me as well to hear that these people aren't just randomly buying it because they think it looks pretty. They actually read the sample chapters and they're excited about the book.
And those sample chapters are available to everyone. There's just a link. One of your headings in your campaign is sample chapters. You click that link and it takes people to a book funnel page where they can load the sample chapter straight onto their book. This is a good practice for all authors, but it's particularly a good practice for debut authors. This helps put people at ease. And gratitude is a powerful thing. And it also changes the nature of what's happening. Because in some ways, Kickstarter is a pre-order platform, but really it's more than that. Because people feel like they're contributing to helping make the book exist. And when I Kickstarted my book, I featured the names of a lot of the backers in the book. There was a credits at the end, and everyone who backed over a certain level got featured in the credits if they wanted to. My book was a little controversial, so it wasn't required. But people really felt a sense of ownership. I know you're not naming any characters. Are you going to have a page at the back of the book where you feature your backers?
Yes, that's in the lowest ebook level because that doesn't cost me anything. And that's something fun for a lot of people. And the people who don't care don't have to be in it. So I didn't see any reason to make it be a higher level for my particular book.
So if someone wants to be immortalized for all time in the pages of your book, it costs $10. You know, and yeah, all the levels above that include that. That's so cheap, right? And first, some people want a legacy and they're like, will anyone ever read my name 100 years from now? Well, if you kickstart a successful book, the answer is maybe, right? It's like, yep. Even after your grandkids are dead, you might still be in a book that people are reading. Most books don't live that long, but you never know. And for $10, it's an easy thing for people to take a flyer on. And like you said, it doesn't cost you anything to include. What would you do differently now that you're a grizzled veteran?
Well, oddly enough, I might do a shorter one next time. And I don't say that for everyone. For me, I was glad I did 22 days for this first one. I think having the first one be 22 to 30 days is good because there is such a huge learning curve for running a Kickstarter. And especially, I kind of regret doing it for my first book being published, just because on top of learning Kickstarter, I'm learning how to get a book printed and formatted and all of that. So there's a lot at once, but it's still worth it. I just think you need to be aware of that and go into it knowing I need to plan this out in advance. But next time I would probably do more like a 17-day campaign because this middle week we're in right now is super slow. They call it the dead zone. And while that's fine, there's an awkwardness to it that just makes it drag. And so getting rid of that middle week, I think, would make the whole thing just feel more energized.
Yeah, I will say your second book will be easier in some ways. It'll be easier because, for one, you'll be able to sell a two-book series because some people backing your next campaign won't have backed the first one. And likely this will be the only way for people to get the collectible hardback because it's hard to sell those one at a time. And it will also be easier because you'll have done this before. But on the flip side, any of your friends and family who are backing because they love you, even though in your video you told them not to, I imagine some of them did anyway, they're probably not going to back your next campaign because they already helped you. You're up and running. The next campaign really lives or dies based off your readers, not your friends and family. Now, I didn't do a short campaign. I think this is actually the shortest campaign I've ever done. It's 28 days. And I want to explain, because for those of you trying to decide whether to do a short campaign or not, since a big way that I get the word out about stuff is this podcast, and people don't listen to podcast episodes right away, I wanted a longer window so that if somebody was 2 weeks behind on the podcast, we'll still hear about it in time to back the campaign, which is very different than if the primary way you're getting the word out about the campaign is email. No one is going to read your email that you sent 3 weeks ago, right? They're either going to read it now and act now, or they're not. And so a shorter campaign makes a little more sense in some ways from an email perspective, because there's always something to talk about in the email. Mm-hmm. Hey, the campaign's live. Oh, you know, send another email. We funded. It's so exciting. Here's a link if you want to jump in. And then an email for each of the stretch goals. And as long as things are proceeding at a rapid clip, there's a lot of fun things to send emails about. And so a shorter campaign makes sense, especially if you have a lot of people who followed it on Kickstarter ahead of time. They probably already made their decision whether they're going to back it or not. And so more time isn't going to bring in more backers. It just adds more psychological stress for you. Because I will say, one of the downsides of Kickstarter, and you're probably doing this, you check the campaign every few hours to see if any new backers came in. And that's distracting. Your productivity does take a hit during a Kickstarter campaign. I imagine it's a little bit less for you since your campaign is funded. For me right now, it's like, am I going to do the novel marketing conference? Like, I don't know. It depends if this is something people want or not. And I'm using Kickstarter in a very different way than you are. I'm using it to test if this is something people want to exist in the world. Because I've gotten so much positive feedback of people saying, oh, I'm so glad you're doing this conference. But then many of those people are not backing it because they were like, oh, I'm so glad you're doing this for other people. So I need to know if people want me to do it for them, right? If this is something that they want. Whereas for you, you're using it more as a pre-order tool. If your campaign had failed to fund, you probably would have still found a way to make the book happen. Probably not the hardback, maybe not the audiobook, but you would have at least done the ebook. But for me, I really am using this as a weather balloon to see if this is something people want. And part of the reason why is because it's different and weird. Your book is not different or weird. It fits very much inside of a genre. And so the main question people are asking is, do I believe that Kryn Norton is writing a book that I would find fun to read? And so far, you've had over 200 people say, yes, I want to give this book a shot without there being any reviews, right? Because that's the one thing you don't have on Kickstarter. There's no reviews.
Well, I do have 3 endorsements on there. So that was another thing that I did. I have 2 critique partners who are already published, and I got endorsements from them, as well as my editor, who is a New York Times bestseller. I had her endorsement on there. So I do think that can be valuable as well if you're a debut author to get that credibility.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's a good element. So if you want to check out this Kickstarter campaign, it concludes on September 26th, 2023. But the campaign will forever be on Kickstarter if you want to look and see how she structured it, how she told her story visually. We'll also have a link directly to it on the show notes for this episode. Craig Norton, any final tips or encouragement for someone who's thinking about giving Kickstarter a shot for their book?
I would say find that buddy who will do it with you. Don't do it alone. And do your research. I see a lot of people saying, oh, I'm thinking of doing this next month because they see success that other people are having. And it's a lot of work. This is an opportunity to build a readership. So you need to see it that way instead of looking at it as a way to make money. So allow yourself the time to do it well.
Well said. Corinne Norton, thank you for joining us today on the Novel Marketing Podcast.
Thanks for having me, Thomas.
If you want to check out the Kickstarter campaign for the 2024 Novel Marketing Conference, we'll have a link in the show notes. You can also go to novelmarketingconference.com. That URL will take you straight to the Kickstarter campaign. And when the campaign's over, it will take you to a webpage with more info about the conference. The Kickstarter ends on October 6th, 2023. And let me explain something I didn't talk about in detail in the last episode, and that is the food. If we're going to host an event in Austin, we've got to go with the local food. Austin has one of the most vibrant food scenes in the country due to our Keep Austin Weird slogan. So people outside of Austin may not know that the Keep the Town Weird slogan came from here originally, and it's all about supporting local businesses. It's not uncommon for a local Austin chain to actually put the big national chain out of business, or at least put the pressure on them, because the Austin food is just so much better. And sometimes the Austin chains will go national. So for breakfast, we're going to have breakfast tacos. And if you've never had an Austin-style breakfast taco, you may get ruined for all other breakfasts. I'm warning you now. As for lunch, the first day we'll have Mighty Fine Burgers. Mighty Fine won the Malcolm Baldrige Award for quality. We studied this award in college. It's like the Nobel Prize for business. Only two companies in Austin have ever won the award, and the other is a hospital. So what makes Mighty Fine Burgers worthy of the Nobel Prize for business? Well, you'll just have to taste and see. They really are that good. And then for lunch on Saturday, there's really no other option than Rudy's Barbecue. Their barbecue is so tender, you can eat it with a flimsy plastic fork. That's how you know it's real Texas barbecue, when it melts in your mouth and you don't need a metal knife or a metal fork. If you have dietary restrictions, we will do our best to accommodate you. Rudy's Barbecue is amazing, but not if you're a vegan. So if you're gluten-free or dairy-free or vegan, we'll do our best to accommodate you, but it may be something different than the meals that I just mentioned. Dinner won't be included, which means you'll have a chance to take your pick of one of Austin's many unbelievable restaurants. People come here just for the restaurants. So you'll have your chance to carpool with some of your author friends and enjoy some of Austin's amazing food. Again, if you want to learn more about the Novel Marketing Conference, go to novelmarketingconference.com. Our featured patron today is Patricia Hartman, author of Drugged. Heather Blanchard came to her sister's house to recover from a broken engagement, but her sister betrays her, leaving her reeling in pain. 14 tequila shots later, Heather flees down a dark road where she catches a ride with a man she shouldn't trust and becomes a target for both the FBI and a Detroit drug gang. Patricia Hartman, thank you so much for being a patron of the Novel Marketing Podcast. Thanks for helping keep this podcast on the air. And hopefully you can make it to that patrons only ice cream social the Thursday before the 2024 Novel Marketing Conference. The Novel Marketing Podcast is a production of AuthorMedia.com. Our guest today is Corinne Norton. Our producer is Lori Christine. Audio engineering is by William Umstadt. The blog post is crafted by Shauna Lettler. And you can find that blog at AuthorMedia.com/387. I'm Thomas Umstadt Jr. saying thank you for listening, and live long and prosper.